This is the web stream of KBOO Portland. KBOO is 100% community supported. If you have not yet become a member, go to the website kboo.fm and click on the tip jar.
The air affecting agricultural land with genetically modified organisms, radiation from all kinds of sources, not just the famous nuclear thing, but all these high-tech means of communication, all kinds of things that are not usually taken into account. I mean, we just think of we just hear the greenhouse gases and so on, but it's every dimension that's being affected, and the species loss and so on. So all this is well known. I don't claim to be a particular expert on actually describing this, but it's well known, and it's universally recognized by scientists. What's extraordinary is the amount of space and attention that's given in this country to people who pretend that all this is not happening. And that's what most preoccupies me, and which I think we all really need to think about how to respond to that situation.
So if I understand you, then you're saying that there's an accumulation over many years of a vast array of scientific information suggesting that we are damaging our environment in ways that is dangerous for us, even in terms of our survival.
Absolutely.
Why is that so little known? Why have those who have pretended to be critics of all of this, pretended that there's contradictory evidence, why have they done what they've done, and why have they been so successful?
Well, they've done what they've done. It's pretty transparent. I mean, ExxonMobil and the Chambers of Commerce and so on, who are front and center of this denialism, they don't want to interfere with the process of growth and accumulation of the capitalist economy. That's clear and straightforward. The ironic thing is that even those who claim to recognize that there's a problem don't challenge that assumption that it's desirable to continue to grow and have profit. So even those who recognize that there's a problem still give credence by giving attention to these people who deny it. So I mean, papers like the New York Times, for example, which is emblematic of this kind of thing, they'll describe all this stuff as though, well, this is just part of the debate. And ironically, even a little bit of the culture that's arisen in the universities around multiculturalism and diversity and so on has come as a kind of justification of not cutting off any point of view. So even a point of view that flies in the face of science is accorded some kind of credibility, just as the way it is in those who deny evolution and so on, so that the denial of the environmental crisis is seen at least as a position that deserves to be given attention, whereas it should be excluded. I mean, the discussion, there's so much that needs to be discussed about how actually to handle the crisis, that to get distracted with people who don't even recognize that it exists is a real disservice.
So your basic argument is that the major thrust, if I've understood you correctly, the major thrust in the denialism, as you call it, comes from corporations, business enterprises, who see this kind of scientific evidence mounting about environmental degradation as risking their profitability, and so it pays them to spend money to hire PR firms and buy scientists and so on to create a fuzziness and a debate so they don't have to deal with the problem. Am I reading you right?
That's correct, and they've had an amazing amount of success because according to surveys, in the last few years, the number of people in this country who recognize the gravity of the crisis has actually declined.
Tell me what is being done. I do understand, and particularly, that there are those who believe that we are capable of, and indeed maybe moving toward, a new kind of capitalist system in the United States, which they call, quote-unquote, green capitalism. In other words, that we are moving away from bread made with wheat that has been treated with pesticides and everything else, and more towards organic wheat, that there's some kind of transition underway. Could you say something about what this green capitalism is, how far it's gone, what its potential is, and how you see that?
Well, the particular examples that you refer to are what I would call a kind of niche market. I mean, obviously the market will respond in certain limited ways if there are some people who are looking for new alternatives. But what this doesn't do is stop the process of oil exploration, for example, and more generally, it doesn't stop the process of economic growth and the continued orientation towards that on the part of the government, that everything is geared toward that. So the so-called green capitalism still doesn't question the idea that unlimited growth and perpetual growth is desirable. And they put the issue exclusively in terms of a question of what forms of energy are used and not in terms of the total amount of productive, extractive, and so on activity, the amount of space used up, the amount of depletion of the aquifers, the amount of destruction of the forests and so on, so that there's a tremendous kind of disconnect. There's a sense that we could have just as much energy and even more by using these alternative forms of energy, each of which has physical limitations, that every type of energy that you can imagine, whether it's limitations of space or whatever, or dangers in the case of geothermal, of provoking seismic reactions and so on. So there are limitations. So whatever one thinks of in terms of alternative energies, and I don't deny that it's important to think of that, what is overlooked is the need to cut back on the total amount of energy used, which in turn implies the need to reorganize the sum total of production and consumption activities, and which I would say in turn requires us to think critically, both locally, nationally, and internationally, to think critically about what sectors of activity should be curtailed, drastically cut back, and so on. And this is what I've found most missing for years and years in all the discussions at every level, certainly at the international level, where they talk about what nations should cut, but what nations should limit themselves, and so on. But they don't talk about the sectors within the countries that don't serve human need, but that instead serve the perpetuation of the system.
Good morning. Yes, and in case you're just tuning in, Art Focus is off today, and instead we are hearing an excerpt of the show Economic Update with host Richard Wolff. His guest is Professor Victor Wallace, editor of the journal Socialism and Democracy, and I am Ivan, and I'm here with Justin, and we are looking for your support, 877-500-5266. Yes, we are in the middle of our spring membership drive, bringing you fabulous music and public affairs specials, such as the Richard Wolff special today, which you can call in, and for a $60 minimum pledge, you can get Democracy at Work, A Cure for Capitalism by Richard Wolff, or for a $90 minimum pledge, you can get Capitalism Hits the Fan by Richard Wolff. Those are both books, and for $150, you can get them both. Isn't that right, Justin?
I was just doing the math in my head. That's absolutely right. We're asking you to take a moment out of your day and just a few pennies, nickels, and dimes out of your wallet and call us and introduce yourself and stand up. Become a stakeholder in the mighty 90.7, 877-500-5266. Just such a modest goal here. And Richard Wolff is another one of our patron saints. We have him in here. He's been interviewed many times. And this is exactly the kind of thing you tune in for. Such a modest goal of only $200 with thousands of you listening. I'm hoping maybe two or three of you would start that sustaining membership of $120 for the year. That amounts to 33 cents a day towards the $2,000. If you could go a little more and set up an electronic funds transfer for that $150, we can send you both of these books, Democracy at Work and Capitalism Hits the Fan. But we can't get those books into your hands until you call us and introduce yourself. 877-500-5266. You can do that online at KBOO.FM. And while you're there, why don't you enter our historic KBOO poster contest? There's a web form where you can make some comments. Tell us if you were at the event represented by this historic poster, and maybe you will win one. While you're there, you can look at our archives. But the real thing that we're talking about today is making sure that your community radio station has what it needs to serve you. That's really how it starts and ends. What does your community radio station need to serve you and your family and your friends? The amount doesn't matter. What it needs is many people standing up and joining and voting and becoming a stakeholder. That's what it needs. Please do so right now. Toll free, 877-500-5266. You can do that online at kboo.fm, or come on down and meet Ivan and me right now at 20 Southeast 8th Avenue in Portland.
In my experience, people have learned to think that if there isn't economic growth and expansion, then their jobs are threatened, that their job in a capitalist system requires the company to keep producing more and more of whatever it is that they help to make, and that anything less or other than that is a threat. And therefore, you can enlist the mass of working people in the goals of a company to get a bigger market share to grow. Whereas the alternative idea that you're, I think, speaking to has to do with the notion that there could be jobs in moving a society from a dangerous environmental situation to a much safer one, and that lots of jobs exist there. And you might think not only in terms of do I have a job or not, depending on what I'm producing now, but rather you could begin to think about, could I have a different job from the one I have now, doing something a lot more positive for the human race than what I'm doing now? How does that fit with what you were saying?
Very much so, although I would say also that in part there's a question of interrogating the whole idea of a job as opposed to a function that needs to be carried out in the society. Because one of the things, if you move away from capitalist agriculture towards a more sustainable agriculture that doesn't deplete the water supply, for example, is that more people would be involved in the agriculture, but not necessarily as a full-time thing. So they would be producing some of their own needs, but thereby have less need of being in the market economy and the wage labor kind of situation. So the whole situation of job, or the concept of job, is associated with wage labor, which is itself one of the problems that we have to surmount or go beyond it.
Yeah, it's interesting, and it's a wonderful transition for us. How often a basic question like the environment and our relationship to it, and so many other questions, get trapped in the assumption that everything in the future we can think of has to look like what we have in the present. You're the editor of a socialist journal, Socialism and Democracy. So tell me how you would define and develop what a socialist response would be to the environmental crisis of our time, and how it would be different from the capitalist one we've been discussing.
Yeah. Well, you start off with the idea that's encompassed in the slogan, people before profits. I would add people and nature before profits. People and nature mutually dependent. You can't have the one, the people can't survive without nature being respected in certain ways. So, I mean, the basic idea with socialism is that decisions about what to produce and how much to produce and so on are not made on the basis of whether profit can be made from it, but rather on the basis of social criteria which are publicly discussed. In other words, that you have an accountable process. And as such, it's not oriented towards accumulation, but rather towards satisfying need. And what level of need has to be satisfied or can be satisfied is something that has to be arrived at on the basis of sort of the fullest possible knowledge and the fullest possible involvement in public discussion. But I would say that the outcome of such deliberation is one in which the society can actually decide whether or not to increase economic activity in any particular area. It's not wedded, as you are under capitalism, to growth. It can reduce, and I would say again, reduce not just understood in an aggregate way and not just understood in a way of belt tightening, but reduce in the sense of cutting back certain spheres of activity which don't serve the general interest. For example, military activity in the whole financial sector of the economy, activity associated with advertising, activity associated with the organization of transit and the organization of residential location, all of which have implications for the environment, and which, if you can get away from the profit orientation, are all subject to reconfiguration, to redesigning communities, removing private cars from certain areas, reducing the total number of private cars, and so on. So all these kinds of things can be done if you have a socially or publicly oriented process, and they can't be done under capitalism. Now, of course, we're talking ultimately about an entire system, but in the meantime, we have to think about doing this directly, establishing certain spheres of activity in which we can begin to put this into practice, both to start achieving some of our goals, but also to educate by example as to the things that are possible.
in a society that commits itself, or at least says so, to democracy, that if it's true, as you point out and others like you point out, that the decisions of corporations to use a particular kind of technology or to expand their businesses have environmental effects, that then if we all live with the consequences, then there is something fundamentally undemocratic in allowing a small number of people in charge of a small number of large corporations who have to make money. They're going to be making decisions that we all have to live with or die from without our participation. Isn't it kind of on the surface an undemocratic arrangement that you are opposing? I mean, is that, am I misreading you?
No, exactly. That's exactly the point. The corporation or the capitalist enterprise is, in structural or political terms, a dictatorship. Those who run it are not accountable to those who work for it or to those who live in the communities affected by it. So that puts into question the whole claim of the society to be run democratically. Capitalism itself is not a democratic system. It was not introduced through any kind of democratic process. It was established as a fait accompli by those who, the capitalists themselves, and whatever democratic institutions have arisen within it on the basis of popular struggles against the domination of those groups. And the struggle has to go much further than it's gone before, because we're seeing the limits of the possibility of continuing life being reached as a result of the continuation of this decision-making process.
And we're asking you to make a decision right now. We're asking you to decide about an alternative way of deploying your money energy. Instead of sending it to the government to be used in drone warfare to systematically hate different members of the community, you can keep that money right here in Portland, right here at 20 Southeast 8th Avenue, serving the entire community with access and training and programming. And it's not mystical. It doesn't go away. It stands here as a monument to your generosity and our progressive nature. So how we deploy that energy makes all the difference in the world. Won't you deploy a little energy our way by changing some pocket change into social change? Toll free, 877-500-5266. That's 877-500-KABU. My name is Justin, and I'm joined by Ivan, and it has been a privilege this morning to be briefly interrupting the programming to give you in Radioland the opportunity to say thank you, to stand up and be counted, to be a stakeholder in our community radio station. 877-500-KABU.
Yes, it has been a privilege to be with you this morning, and it has been my first time pitching, and it's been a pleasure and a joy working with Justin, the seasoned member here at KABU, giving you the best broadcasting that we possibly can, and you can show your support by calling 877-500-5266. You know, 90% of our funding comes from you, the listener, and statistics show that only 10% of listeners actually call in and become members. You know, we are the grassiest of grassroots, and you are the roots of this station. You are the seeds. Become a seed today. Sprout into a root and become the grass, the bedding, the bedrock of KABU. Calling 877-500-5266 or going online at kboo.org. FM.
I am in awe at how far you got with that metaphor, Ivan. It's just fabulous. You two in Radioland, I know you're thinking, wow, she really got her money's worth out of that one. Why don't you call and say thank you? 877-500-5266. If you could do $60, we could give you a copy of Richard Wolff's Democracy at Work. If you could do $90, we could give you a copy of Capitalism Hits the Fan. If you could do $150, we could give them both to you. We also still have those audio flash drives, 4 gigabytes of filled with KABU content, our patron saints, as it were. We've got that shirt that is really that's making waves here. Mm-hmm. We are telling the whole world that KBOO is not just for commie pinko freaks, self-righteous gutter punks, drug-addled peaceniks, anarcho-syndicalists, hippie tree huggers, gay hillbillies, militant vegans, geriatric deadheads, or the foil hat brigade anymore. That's right. Call us up and tell us where you fit on the spectrum. We are not going to sell those t-shirts. That is available only this membership drive with a membership that you start for a minimum of $90. Maybe you could do $180 today and we could give you the t-shirt and a copy of Capitalism Hits the Fan. Toll free 877-500-5266. Everyone's doing their part here. Restaurants are donating food. Thank you, Bread and Ink Cafe, 3610 Southeast Hawthorne, Voodoo Donut, 1501 Northeast Davis, Produce Row, 204 Southeast Oak, and Dove Vivi at 2727 Northeast Gleason. Thank you so much to these restaurants. In fact, if you're out and about, we've got bucket loads of Voodoo Donuts.
Literally.
Why don't you come in,
yes,
and have a donut and make your donation in person? 20 Southeast 8th Avenue.
You know, for just $20 a year, that's 6 cents a day or 38 cents a week. We have the whole thing broken down for us here. $100 a year, that's just 27 cents a day, a mere 27 cents. Everyone brings you this fantastic programming at KBOO 877-500-5266. And I want to thank everybody for their support and calling in today and helping us get to our goal of, what is it,
$99,000 is the goal for this membership drive. We're nearing $30,000, so we're making a lot of progress. If you wanted to be a hero, now's a pretty decent time to consider it. We've still got about 70 grand to go, and we do as the I Ching teaches us. We heap up small things in order to make great things. And remember, there may be smaller contributions. A $20 a year is considered a sort of a limited income membership. $40 is the basic amount, but what we're really trying to get across to you is it's not the amount of money that you call up and donate. It's that you add your name to the rolls, that you stand up and be counted and become a stakeholder. It's really critical that you do that. And imagine, as Ivan was saying, that since about 90% haven't made the call, think of how much more we could be doing. I was listening to Professor Wallace there talking about growth, and I was thinking, well, we've got the one growth paradigm that really is worthy, and that is growing our service, growing our ability to serve the community, to be able to train more people, to be able to do more programming, to be able to upgrade our equipment. Folks, it starts and ends with you looking around and realizing that it's all about you. It's time now to stop waiting for someone else to take care of it. It's time to reach deep down and do it now. 877-500-5266. Toll free from anywhere in North America. 877-500-KBOO.
If you're right, if the environmental crisis is at a very extreme point already in threatening ourselves, our generation, children, and so on, how can we overcome what you earlier called the denialism that has been fostered by the agencies you've described? Do you have any thoughts about how the situation could be changed in terms of the consciousness of the mass of the, for example, the American people, and in terms of actions that they might undertake?
Mm-hmm. What I would urge everybody to do is to not only educate yourselves about this, but to make it a subject of discussion in every sphere of activity. We can use the alternative media. Some of them are already giving this kind of emphasis. I think that, for example, Democracy Now, by actually spending a week in Durban, helped. But this kind of thing is the type of question that should be in the forefront of discussion every day, just the way we discuss, the way the present media discuss the ups and downs of the stock market. I mean, we need to not only to pay attention to what's happening to the environment, but to be involved in a discussion in which concrete proposals are put on the table in a way that ultimately would be routine for the entire society if we had a social transformation, but we can't wait for that to address these problems now, so that the questions so that the questions have to be brought. I have been interested in the indigenous movements around the world, even though they're small in number relative to the total global population, simply in the sense that they reflect societies in which the whole popular culture is bound up with a kind of awareness of their interaction in with and dependence on the natural environment. And the question of how this kind of culture really can be brought into connection with the daily culture of people living surrounded by the sort of the commercial influences and the commercial cultural influences that, that we deal with, so that I suppose, for example, in schools, in every sphere, in every subject that one addresses, there is an environmental dimension which needs to be brought out continuously, because we're dealing with the limits of resource, we're dealing with the conditions for continuing life. So an expression of the urgency of this in a context that is constantly before the public, and every kind of issue. I'm just thinking off the top of my head now about sports facilities, for example, where they have synthetic turf and so on, and all the toxins that go into that and the adverse effects of it, or in the context of educational activities, thinking of the buildings in which it takes place, in the building in which they take place, or of the processes people have to go through to get there, how the activities that they're engaged in could be relocated, reorganized, how people also can establish networks independent of existing structures to constantly educate themselves and spread awareness of these issues. I mean, it's inseparable, I think, from the larger issues, from the economic issues that you discuss regularly on this. But I think that since the economic issues do ultimately depend on the resources that we use and on the notion of what it is that drives the decisions, that this is an inseparable component, an inseparable dimension of the whole sphere of activity that you're discussing.
Victor Wallace, thank you very much for coming today. I really appreciate you taking the time and trouble to join us today and bring this issue of the environment back into the front and center position it deserves.
Thank you, Rick.
Have you heard about the Melting Pot Silent Mobile Dance Parties?
Silent dance? Doesn't sound very fun.
Actually, it's a lot of fun. Picture 200 people dancing with headphones to the same music. The Melting Pot radio show will have a series of silent dance parties from 8 to 10 p.m. Tuesdays in Portland parks and public spaces. That's Tuesdays from 8 to 10 p.m. For more information and this week's location, go to kboo.fm/silent dance parties.
And now, the KBOO News at Noon for March 26, 2013. A recent Little League fundraiser raffle in St. Helens, Oregon offered an unorthodox prize, an AR-15 rifle. Now, a group of local parents wants the board of the league fired for the raffle, calling it inappropriate. The fundraiser raised $1,600. The retail price of an AR-15 rifle is about $900.
Penguin Group USA, Inc., the well-known publishing group, has sued American Panda, an Oregon nonprofit online lending library, for posting entire books of exclusive content. American Panda countered that it is able to do so because it is a library and has fair use rights, but Penguin said that doesn't include full content. Penguin demands that American Panda stops posting full content of its books and seeks damages.
An Oregon-based small business advocacy group called the Main Street Alliance released a report today about what laws small business owners want enacted. The report found that the majority of small business owners wanted Congress to close tax loopholes for the rich. The report also found that most small business owners view impending cuts to Social Security and Medicare as serious threats to their businesses. Cuts to Social Security and Medicare are expected to decrease the demand for goods and services that small businesses provide.
Government watchdog group The Washington Guardian found that congressmen and women were using lots of taxpayers' money for food and coffee spending, amongst crying out for budget cuts. House leaders spent thousands of dollars at Harris Teeter, Whole Foods, Joe Reagan's Coffee Supplies, Dunkin' Donuts, P.F. Chang's, Qdoba Mexican Grill, and Taylor Gourmet, just to name a few, Washington Guardian reporter Sarah Carter said. Congress is due to scale back its spending by 8% starting this month, and members are looking for ways to do so without affecting constituents greatly.
Clackamas County Sheriff Sergeant Steve Heisen was arrested for violating a restraining order that barred him from contacting his wife. Heisen already faces charges of domestic assault and witness tampering. Heisen was also accused of domestic violence in 2008 and 2011, but no charges were brought against him until recently. Heisen is being held in Clark County without bail.
The International Criminal Court's longest-sought fugitive, Rwandan-born warlord Bosco Ntaganda, turned himself in last week to seek refuge. Ntaganda is the military chief of staff of the National Congress for the Defense of the People, an armed militia group fighting in eastern Congo from 2002 to 2003, and faces charges for murder, rape, pillaging, and using child soldiers. He is appearing in court today to be identified, hear his charges, and have a date set for a hearing.
That's all for the KABU News at Noon for March 26. Tune in every weekday at 5 for more local, national, and international news produced by volunteer reporters in our Portland studios.
This is Desiree Garcia with KABU News.
And I'm Rob Shryock.